Fuck it.
Fuck it.
Fuck it.
Hey, mama. If you are a mom and are tired of the wash, rinse, repeat, burnout cycle of motherhood, this podcast is for you. If you feel lonely and isolated in your motherhood journey, this podcast is for you. If you feel like you have completely lost your identity since your babies were born, this podcast is for you. If you feel like every other mom has it together except for you, this podcast is for you. My name is Amanda, and I'm a life coach dedicated to teaching every mom the tools she needs to liberate herself off the back burner. I am living proof that a woman can be present and loving to her kids while also being a whole ass person outside of being that kid's mom. The secret? Learning when to say fuck it.
Hello. I am so happy right now because I'm cold. Like 2 days ago, I was bitching about the heat. Actually, yesterday, I was bitching about the heat and it was so humid yesterday. But like 2 days ago, it was literally pushing 100. And now today, it's like in the high 60s and I'm chilly. And it's so lovely. It's such a lovely sensation to be cold again after being hot. And that's why I like the seasons. Fall is my absolute favorite, which I know I've been talking about nonstop. And you know what? I don't care because it's my favorite and I love it. And this is my podcast and I can do what I want. Oh God, I sound like a bratty kid, like that horrible one from Willy Wonka. What was her name? Veronica, I think. The don't care how I want it now. That's me with fall. Hopefully a little less obnoxious, though. I hope that the weather is starting to cool off for you wherever you're at, because it's September and it's time, right? Right. So for those of you who have been following me for a bit, you know that I'm divorced and I co-parent with my girl's dad. We're fortunate to have a pretty good co-parenting relationship. No, that's not the right phrasing, because saying we're fortunate makes it seem like some external force, like benevolently, just like blessed us with this. Or we just like mysteriously found our way here to this state of being, you know, okay to co-parent together. And that is absolutely not the case. We've had to work really hard to get to this point. It did not start here. It took a lot of time and it continues to take a lot of effort on both of our parts to peacefully co-parent. So I'm going to do a whole like podcast on co-parenting, but I will say right now, like if you are in the same boat as me and you're co-parenting and you're going through a rough patch, or maybe you're in the very beginning and it's really nasty, hang in there. It can still get better. I will say that the majority of the work that is needed and required to make it happen and make it work is work that we do on ourselves. So this is not like he and I have all of these like, you know, talks one-on-one and like talk each other's ear off. That wouldn't work very well. That would, you know, no thanks. It really is work that you do on yourself individually. But again, that's another podcast. But anyways, the logistical system that we have established works really well for us, in that we share taxi duties no matter which house the girls are staying at. So right now I live a town away from where my kids go to school and where they dance. But their dad lives, you know, within the school district. So bus transportation is not an option for me, but it is for him. Our oldest is in middle school. And so she starts an hour before her sisters and then gets out of school an hour before her sisters. And so in the morning, when the kids are with me, I drop Aowen off at the middle school And then I drop the other three off with their dad. So that way they can continue like just getting ready for school or just chilling and waiting for the bus to come. And so, you know, it's very nice to have that because we have a peaceful co-parenting relationship. And we also share taxi duties for dance, which is really great because we both of us get to see the kids all the time, no matter which house they're staying at. So like our current child placement schedule is just a week on, week off, week on, week off. And so I really love the fact that I get to see them. I don't have to wait a whole 7 days to see them because we share these duties. We're not in a nasty phase anymore. It was not always like this anymore, where, you know, we just refuse to help the other person, or, you know, if we do, it's done very spitefully. I'm really glad that we're past that. But all that just to say, their dad happens to live in a neighborhood with a buttload of kids. Like, there's so many kids in that neighborhood. And it just so happens that a couple of my girls' best friends live on their street. So it's kind of just like a dream neighborhood for them, for my girls. And so there has been this fight that happens sometimes on days when the girls don't have dance. And during the weeks that they stay with me, when I go pick them up after, you know, the bus drops the younger three off, and they're asking me, you know, can we spend some more time at dad's? Because we want to play with our friends. And I'm like, no, because I really have nothing to do while you guys are playing with your friends. I don't live here. And just because like I have a good relationship, like a good co-parenting relationship with their dad, doesn't necessarily mean that he and I want to spend like extra time together. Like, we're completely, what's the word I'm looking for? Shit. Oh my God, it's totally, my brain is blank. We're perfectly nice to each other is what I'm trying to say. We're perfectly nice to each other, but that doesn't mean that you want to spend like extra time together, right? Like, there still is a reason why your marriage is complete. But, you know, this fight with my kids, and they'll say, you know, in the moment, in the heat of the moment, like, oh, like my 6-year-old, okay. Be like, oh, mom, you're so mean. You never let us do anything. I don't want to go home with you. And hence the title of this podcast, right? Because sometimes we find ourselves in positions where our kids say shit and we take it personally. And it then hurts our feelings when we do that. So now, if this podcast were a movie, there would be a very smooth transition into like a backflash. Is that flashback? I was like, that didn't sound right. It's not backflash. Into a flashback to give some context to my story. Okay. I am sharing this part of my story not to elicit pity or to attempt to get people like on my side and against the girl's dad at all. That's not my intention. My intention is always to help you and to encourage you and to let you know you're not alone. Wherever you are right now, whatever circumstance you find yourself in, you do have a choice. You don't have to stay there. You do not have to be a victim of your circumstances. And I say this not just because, you know, I read it in some encouraging book or something, or it's been some affirmation that I hung up on my wall from Hobby Lobby. I say this because I've lived it. Okay. So this is why I'm sharing this part of my story with you, so that you can see I've lived it. And it's just a testament to all the work that I've done on myself, which I'm very honored and proud to be able to share with you guys. So my girl's dad is a trust fund baby. And when our oldest was one, his parents decided to up his monthly allotment of the family money to where we could get by if I quit my job. And I really wanted to stay home with my daughter. I never thought that I would want to be a stay-at-home mom. And then I had her. And I just hated having to like tear myself away to work. And so that's the choice that I made. And over the years, his parents continued to support us, albeit just enough to survive. And I continued to make the choice to be a stay-at-home mom because I wanted to. Their dad never got a job or made any money of his own, but he also didn't really need to because we were getting by. And then when I decided to file for divorce, our youngest was two. And their paternal grandfather came to me and said that he wanted to continue to financially support the girls and I until Ozzy was in kindergarten because he didn't want any of his grandkids having to go to daycare, you know, or ending up in daycare just because we were getting divorced. He didn't like that. My kids all have fall birthdays. We're actually heading into birthday season, October through December 1st, all four of them. It's a crazy time. So with their fall birthdays, it puts them all in like the older part of their class. So this time frame gave me 3.5 years of financial support. And as I said, I had chosen to be a stay-at-home mom for at that point, it was like almost 8 or 9 years. And so I've been out of the workforce for that long. So my girl's paternal side of the family owned the house that we lived in at the time that we filed for divorce. And it was completely paid off. And I had asked them to allow the girls and I to stay in the house, not because like I wanted it, honestly, for me, like if I was strictly just thinking of myself, like I wanted a fresh start, but I was thinking of the girls and just trying to keep as many things consistent for them as possible. And I told them, you know, like, you can keep it in the trust name or put it in the girl's name. I will pay rent. Just please let the girls stay in their house. But then I was told that it was not the girls' house. It was their house and they could do what they wanted with it, including donating it to the Preservation of Aardvark Society. So we were asked to move as soon as possible. So they sold the house, which again was completely paid off, no mortgage on it whatsoever. And then they took that money and built their son a custom built $500,000 house, which is how their dad, my girl's dad, came to live in the neighborhood that my girls love so much because there are so many kids to play with and some of their best friends live on their same street. So I had 3.5 years to figure my shit out and figure out how I was going to financially support my four kids on my own. And so I chose to go back to school and get my bachelor's in accounting. My Nana has her own accounting business. Yes, has, as in present tense. That queen is 86 and she still works. Not because she has to, but because she really does love her work. She's always loved it. She loves her clients. She loves helping people. And quite frankly, she just gets bored if she doesn't have anything like purposeful to do. I love her so much. But anyways, when I was in high school, she brought me into the family business and started teaching me bookkeeping. And I caught on to it really quickly. I was really good at it. And she, you know, encouraged me at the time to be like, Mijita, you should major in accounting. Like, this is solid work. You're really good at it. Everyone always needs an accountant. But I fucking hated it at the time because I was just like, oh my God, this is the most boring shit of my life. But now, at this point of my story, I was like 31 and a single mom of four kids, and I ran to accounting with open, grateful arms. Because Nana's right, the world always needs an accountant. I got into an online accelerated program, and paid for the tuition with grants and student loans. And I came up with a plan to finish school with my bachelor's in 2.5 years, which would be a year early, like a year earlier than the time that they had given me. Right. I was very proud of myself for like figuring that plan out. But at this time, we did not have 50-50 child placement. He only had the girls every other weekend. So they were with me most of the time. And I only had two of them in full-time school. Laurelyn was in 4K, which is a half day. And Oz was a two-year-old. She's a terrible toddler. So my schedule was insane. I woke up at 3 a.m. and I would work on my schoolwork until I had to get the kids up at 7. And then I would just do my mom gig all day long, you know, getting the kids to school and taking care of Ozzy all day long. And then Laurelyn for the second half of the day, picking them all up, taking them to dance. And that was also the first year that Eowyn, my oldest, did dance competition. So we were getting used to that whole schedule. And then I'd crash at 9 p.m. when I put them to bed and wake up and do it all over again. My dad had moved out here to Wisconsin at that point in time. So he was able to come and help me with, you know, a couple days a week so that I could like go to the library and catch up on more studies and whatever. But that was my schedule. That's what I was doing. But I was doing it. I got to toot my own horn. Your bitch had a 4.0 GPA. Fuck yes. Moms can do anything. I was exhausted, but I was doing it. Oh, did I mention that this was fall of 2019? Yeah, everything's about to go to shit, so buckle up. March 2020, stay-at-home orders because of COVID. So now I had all my kids home all the time, and two of them needed to be homeschooled on top of me going to school. Fuck no. Hard pass. I decreased my class load to half so that I could like manage everything. And then April 2020, I received an email from my girl's paternal grandparents stating that that would be the final month of their financial gifting, and that it had nothing to do with the pandemic. It was just something they'd been thinking about doing for a while. So I had to pivot again. I dropped out of school. I threw a resume together and I applied to anything and everything I could find, which was not a lot because most businesses weren't really hiring because, you know, the world was on fire. You guys, I couldn't even get an interview for a secretarial position. I was so overqualified to be a secretary with my bookkeeping experience. I couldn't get an interview because it was just, the market was flooded. You were there, you know. My mom was able to float us financially for the month of May. But then I just waved my white flag and I broke my lease. Thankfully, my landlord did not come after me for my missing rent. And he was able to fill the tenancy. Thank God. And I moved in with my dad. Because I was out of work, just like 16 million other Americans at the time. Did you know that bunking up with family is considered a form of homelessness? I didn't either. And I also did not appreciate learning that when I was in the middle of doing just that. Needless to say, my mental health and like just my headspace was in the fucking toilet at that point. And then in June, I got hired as a temp admin assistant at a job. At an office, doing like bookkeeping and general administrative work. And that turned into a full-time position 6 months later. And a year from that, I got promoted to staff accountant. But the girls and I were still living with my dad because even with that, I could not afford a place on my own. Bookkeepers and accountants don't make enough for what we do. I just have to throw that out there. I'm going to go on my soap stand for just a little tiny sentence there. You need to pay the keepers of your finances better, because if we leave, you're fucked. I never went back to school to finish my degree because I was still just trying to figure out how to be a work out of the home mom. And my kids were also having a really hard time adjusting at that point. So I didn't really feel like it was the right time for me to be like, oh, I'm going to work 40 hours out of the home. I'll come home for dinner, say hi, and then I'm going to barricade myself in the bedroom to study. And I didn't have the mental capacity either because I was quite frankly depressed. And then in November of 2021, I got COVID. And my dad got it from me. And he was in the hospital for 3 weeks before he passed away from COVID on December 17th, 2021. So on top of dealing with the grief of losing my dad and the guilt of believing that I caused his death, I also became the personal representative of his estate because he didn't have anything in order. It was a mess. And we're actually still dealing with that now in September of 2023. It's ridiculous. So if you haven't gotten your will and your shit put together, please, for the sake of whoever has to deal with it, if you die, please deal with it now. My dad had moved out to Wisconsin alone, but he was still technically married. His house was completely paid off and it was like the only major asset that he had. And as many of you will remember, the housing market blew up in 2022. I didn't make enough money to qualify for a mortgage large enough to buy the house from his wife. We then talked about drawing up an agreement where I could slowly buy the house off of her until I could hopefully, you know, down the line qualify for a mortgage to buy the rest of the house from her. But she said no. So I had to move my girls again, which is how we ended up in our current townhouse, one town away from where they go to school and dance. Needless to say, I have worked my ass off to get to where I am today, both like tangibly where I am and mentally where I am. One day, very soon, my company will be a multi-million dollar asset that exists to serve women and that was built with women-owned money. One day, very soon, I will have a house of my own in that town that my girls go to school and dance in that I paid for completely on my own. But for right now, this is where we're at. So when my kids are whining about how they don't want to come home with me because my neighborhood is boring, my knee-jerk reaction is always, ouch, that really fucking hurts. But I've coached myself many times on this. And I realize that the only times when it hurts is when I'm letting it mean that my kids don't appreciate all that I've done for them or that they don't appreciate all the obstacles I had to overcome to get to this point, or that they don't want to be with me. None of which are true. My girls love the shit out of me, and I know that they appreciate everything that I do. And it's not their responsibility to see what I've overcome. They're kids. And everything that I've overcome does not need to be validated by other people. All of those obstacles were there to grow me. The only one who needs to see how incredible I am is me. The simple truth is that my kids are kids, and kids love hanging out with their friends. Their desire to hang out with their friends has nothing to do with their love, respect, and appreciation of me as their mom. And if I made it about that, all I would be doing is shoving the responsibility of my insecurity on them, and that shit isn't healthy. Remember what I said in last week's episode about how defensiveness is always a flag to the deeper work that we need to do? I'm fucking telling you guys, it's so true. When defensiveness comes knocking, there's always an opportunity to open the door to healing. I hear moms talk about how their kids hurt their feelings when, you know, their kids said such and such thing. And I felt that hurt myself so many times. But every time I've felt hurt by something my kids said and I've coached myself on it, it always boils down to some version of this one thought, which is, I can't believe after all I do for them, they treated me this way. And what that thought tells me is, number one, I'm allowing the words my kid is saying in a moment of emotional activation to be the equation, to be in the equation of my value and worth as a person. Two, I am relying on other people to create my value for me instead of creating it myself. And three, I'm putting my entire worth as a person on how well I'm doing motherhood. Because when I'm living in the sufficiency of knowing that I am inherently worthy and valuable just for existing, and when I'm prioritizing myself and my joy in my every single day, I have a completely different thought when my kids say words that used to hurt my feelings, which is, they're just processing a negative sensation in their bodies right now. And this is yet another beautiful example of how our thoughts create our feelings. My kids are just saying words. Your kids are just saying words. It is the way that our brain processes the words that they're saying and what our brain makes those words mean about us. And then it causes the sensation of feeling hurt. But since I now know that I'm in charge of my own feelings and the thoughts that create them, I spend very little time feeling hurt by words or actions of other people. This does not mean that I am a robot and that I'm like magically now immune from feeling hurt ever again. Thought work is not about never feeling shitty again. It's about learning how to have a different experience of the negative sensations in your body. So instead of carrying around this hurt that was done to me by someone else for the rest of the day or for days, I feel the hurt, but I'm able to stop the spiral. I don't sit and stew in the thoughts of how no one appreciates me because that's just not fucking helpful and it's completely optional. That's what thought work is all about, having the tools to be able to see all thoughts as options and getting to choose what we want to keep or change based on the filter of, is this thought helpful? Is this thought helpful to the woman that you are becoming? Is it helpful to the woman that you are becoming to think that nobody appreciates you and your family? That no one cares about all the work that you do? Is it helpful to think that you are at the mercy of everyone else's moods and words? No, it's not. So the next time your kids, or anyone really, says something that hurts your feelings, I want you to do these four things. Number one, pretend you're retelling the story of what happened to somebody else, and that somebody else responds with, "So what?" Number two, whatever comes up after being faced with the question, "So what?" write it down. That is where you're going to find all the golden nuggets of what's really causing your hurt feelings. Number three, anytime you get stuck and you know that there's like another layer that you can't access, ask yourself, "So what?" again, or ask yourself, "Why? So what if they think that? Why does this matter? What are you making it mean about you?" Number four, take your self-care seriously. And I'm not talking about like a fucking bath with some bath salts once a month, once you're at your wit's end and you've already blown up at everybody and you think everybody just doesn't give a shit about you. I'm talking about working on the thought, when I take care of myself first, I become a better mom. Every single day, I want you to work on that thought and working on taking small steps every single day to make that thought a reality. I started with a 30-day commitment to doing my hair every single day for those 30 days. That's where I started with my like learning how to take care of myself. And then I graduated from there to waking up before my kids every single day so that I could have my coffee in peace and quiet and still drink it while it's hot. I would just sit there and do nothing. I would not multitask. I would not do the dishes. I would not plan for the day. I would do nothing. I would sit there and I would read and I would have my coffee. Start small. That's the key with any big change that you want to make in your life. You got to start small and don't give up.
Are you living your one wild life to the fullest? You're not? Why the fuck not? What are you waiting for? The time to live is now, mama. Do not wait until your youngest is in college. Let your dreams hire me for an hour so I can explain how I can help you achieve any goal in your life. You've put yourself off long enough. It's time to pour into you. The link to schedule your 60-minute complimentary consultation is in my show notes. Join the community of Fuck It Moms by following me on Instagram and Facebook at Fuck It Mothering. That's fuck without the U. So F-C-K It Mothering. Make sure you subscribe to my channel so you never miss your weekly encouragement. And please rate, review, comment, and share. All of these things help with the algorithms, so that way when other overwhelmed moms are looking for encouragement, they can find me. Every month, I give away one of my favorite books and a Starbucks card to a lucky winner. All you have to do to enter is write a review or tag me in social media when you share an episode. See you next Sunday, gorgeous.